North American songwriter, we had the opportunity to talk to Matt Hafey of Trivium over Zoom video. Matt takes us through his entire musical career with Trivium. He talks about where he was born and raised, how he got into music, joining Trivium at 13 years old, getting signed to a record deal when he was still in high school, signing a major label deal while still in high school. He talks about right when he graduated, doing a massive tour with Trivium. He talks about meeting James Hetfield for the first time and how it kind of went awkwardly weird. And I kind of had to give him my story about when I met Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day the first time, how I couldn't open my mouth. But it was quite a funny story. He also talks a lot about his YouTube channel. He tells us about the record he did with Jared Dines, the latest Trivium release, which they put out during quarantine. They weren't one of the bands that saved the record. They're like, we're putting it out right away. We want our fans to have this record and have something to listen to during this unfortunate time. And he talks to us about this airplane hangar that the band has purchased and what they're going to be doing with it. You can watch the interview with Matt Hafey and myself on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards, and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Bringing Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Matt Hafey. Good to see you. So our podcast is all about you, your journey in music. We'll talk about Trivium and the record you just did with Jared Dines, if that's cool as well.
Of course. Yeah. Anything goes. Anything goes with me.
Awesome, dude. So first off, the band formed in you guys were in Florida, right? Orlando, or is that where you're originally from?
I was originally born in Iwakuni, Japan, moved to San Diego, California, then Coral Springs, Florida, Arlington Heights, Illinois, and then to Orlando, Florida.
Oh, my, you're in San Diego. That's where I was born and raised.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it was just from like 1 to maybe 3 or 5 or so.
Okay.
So briefly.
Do you remember part of San Diego? Any idea?
No, I don't remember that. I don't remember that, unfortunately. So then when I was finally in Orlando, tried out for Trivium in 1999 when I was 13 years old, made it in the band, first job, and I've been there ever since.
That's so crazy. So talk to me about, what was the first instrument you learned how to play?
The first instrument I ever picked up was guitar. I picked it up just because it was the same thing everyone else did. The first style of music I got into was pop punk and ska. Because mm-hmm. Orlando, Florida was all about ska and pop punk. That was what was big in Central Florida at the time.
Sure. Like, got into that. Was out of there. And
yeah, band. Like the, yep. Yep. So like first show I ever saw was Less Than Jake. Then Real Big Fish and Blink-182, saw them on separate shows. So I tried out for a pop punk band called Freshly Squeezed, who was still around to this day with some loose form in the lineup that it was. They're called Rory now, I believe.
Okay.
They might have a different name now, but so I tried out, didn't get the call back. So I was like, all right, screw guitar. I'm done with this.
At 13, you didn't get the call back?
That was 12. 12. Oh, 12. Okay. So then I essentially gave up on guitar music, and someone lent me the Black Album by Metallica. Uh-huh. I heard that and I was like, I've never heard metal. I didn't know what these sounds were, but I feel like this is more what I'm meant to play. So I locked myself in my room, played the guitar till I could emulate the sounds I was hearing. And then I was sort of unaware that that's what practice was. I started getting good at the instrument, played my 8th grade talent show, played No Leaf Clover by Metallica, was uh-huh. asked by a couple of high school kids in the local high school, hey, do you want to try out for a band? Tried out for this band called Trivium, who had a 4-piece lineup. Their originally guitar player left before they ever practiced. I tried out for the role, got in. The original singer then left at about 3 or 4 months in. He wanted to be an industrial band. We wanted to be a metal band.
Uh-huh.
Couldn't find a singer after another couple of months. Then I was made the singer and the guitar player, a trio for a while, went through tons of lineup changes, finally sure. getting Corey in 2003, Paulo in 2004, and Alex in 2017.
Wow. 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 I want to talk to you about No Leaf Clover. That's an interesting choice of a cover song. I mean, that was on that like
S&M.
Theatrical record, right? Yeah. With San Francisco Orchestra and stuff. What made you choose that song? Like, were you just into that album?
Yeah, that's right when that record came out. I loved that song. I still do love that song. Sometimes I wish there was a studio version of it. I guess it's cool that there isn't.
Right. I was wondering about that too.
That's sort of one of the coolest Metallica songs they've ever written, in my opinion. It just gravitated towards me. So I did that one. When I got in Metallica, I got in the Black Album. And then because everything else was already out, I think that would have been 1998, 1999 when I got the Black Album. I think that's when mm-hmm. Load was already out, Reload was already out, Garage Days, S&M. So I was kind of checking out everything that was right around that time period. So mm-hmm. I got in the Black Album, then Load, Reload, Garage Incorporated, and S&M next, which sure. I know is not the way you're supposed to do it.
Well,
but
that's kind of what
I
yeah, how I got into Metallica too. Because for my age, I was like, well, the Enter Sandman was big on the radio. And then I kind of was like, whoa, and I went backwards. And then other stuff was coming out. And you're kind of like in the midst of their career because it's so insane. But
Exactly. So I started going backwards from there. And that's when I started getting into different styles of music. Our original drummer, he got me into like Pantera, Testament, Megadeth, Slayer, started getting into that stuff. When I was around 15 or 16 or so, is thanks to Napster, I actually discovered a lot of mine, what became some of my biggest influences. That was sort of tape trading for me, because tape trading didn't exist in the late 90s, early 2000s. It was way past gone, but that's when Napster was around. So people started sending me songs. I got a hold of early In Flames, early At the Gates.
Wow.
And I started hearing melodic death metal. I was like, this is the style that I didn't know it gets heavier than the bands already got into.
Sure.
I started getting heavily into melodic death metal, black metal, and death metal through Napster. So I would download the full records, burn them on CDR, listen to them as my mom drove me to school. And I would order those CDs from like local bookstores, wait for them to come in, buy the real one, get rid of the CDR. And that's where you start to see Trivium's like early formation. Like our sound was, we were a three-piece thrash band essentially, but that was also into death metal. Then we started getting into a little bit more melodic death metal. Then I got introduced to hardcore and metalcore. Actually, the first genre or first bands of metalcore I ever heard were German metalcore bands. Heaven Shall Burn, Caliban. That was the first time I ever heard metalcore. And those were actually very big influences on me. And so is that mixture of like classic metal, extreme metal being melodic death metal, black metal, and metalcore slash hardcore that sort of really solidified where I wanted to go as a band. I was like, I like mixing these things that maybe you're not supposed to mix. Mm-hmm. I mean, at that time, death metal was supposed to stay over here and hardcore was supposed to stay over here. And I liked the idea of mixing everything together. And we keep doing that still to this day.
I feel
like we've really found even better ways to mix in black metal and symphonic music and hardcore and metal all in this one thing. That's where that started coming into play.
Definitely. I can definitely hear that. Well, that's interesting that you were into those German bands, because the first record label you signed to, Life Force, was a German label, or is a German label.
Yep. It's pretty crazy. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. The story of us getting signed, my dad was our band's manager from basically when I was 13 to about my mid 20s. And so then he decided to step back.
Oh, I was going to say real quick. So he was your parents or your dad, at least. I mean, sounds like
both parents. Yeah. They were super supportive
of you, which is amazing, because a lot of kids don't have that. At 13, your dad's like, I'm going to manage your band. You guys are going to do something.
I was
like,
very, very lucky to have the support of my parents. I'm not saying it's impossible for other people to make this happen without it, but that definitely helped me out. My dad's like, we should get a professional demo. We did the Blue demo. We're a three piece. So it was myself, Brent, and Travis. So we're sort of thrashy, but sort of having that little bit of melodic death metal coming in. It wasn't really, the metalcore introduction wasn't there yet. He was able to get that Blue demo to our webmaster, who's a Swedish guy who was doing the websites for In Flames. Got that to Jesper Stromblad from In Flames, who's one of my heroes. And they actually sent me a picture back of Jesper holding the Blue demo saying how great it was.
Oh,
Frederick,
my gosh.
Was also doing a website for Life Force Records. And so that's why he passed the Blue demo to Life Force. Life Force said, hey, we're into you. They signed us. And then we were signed for, I guess, like 6-ish months or so. I remember when the record release day was supposed to be. This was when Life Force was much smaller. Uh-huh. I went to my local record store. I was like, all right, do you guys have Trivium? They're like, what's that? No one had it in stock. At least
they didn't have like the national distribution, really.
I don't even know if it was available in the U.S. So I remember our release date was pretty scarred by that you could not find our record anywhere. They eventually got a better distribution deal a couple months down the road, but Roadrunner actually contacted us. Monty Connor from Roadrunner Records actually contacted us saying, hey, you guys are a good band. You're not there yet. I'm curious to see where you're at in the future.
Like he signed you off of that first record.
No. He said, you guys got something good. Let's see where you're at. But we took that as a spark. And we said, okay, let's record validation. The stuff we've been working on now. So we decided to get in the studio immediately. I think it was within like a week. We're like, all right, let's get back into the same studio we did the Blue demo at. Recorded the demo versions of like Light to the Flies, The Deceived, and Blinding Tears. Uh-huh. Also decided to fund our own music video for like Light to the Flies. Did all that, sent it to Monty. And then Monty signed us pretty much immediately once he saw that. Was like, all right, these guys can work for themselves. They saw that they'll take initiative and take a tip and a hint to really pursue something.
Sure. Yeah. They saw that drive that you guys had. Mm-hmm. Were you guys... I mean, and then that record does really well, right? So it's like 100,000 copies.
It did very
copies.
Well. I mean, that's that. It did 100,000 just in the UK alone. I mean, the UK, it's a gold record. It's probably a little past there now. I think crazy. Worldwide, it's got to be hundreds of thousands worldwide for that record, at least.
And how old are you guys at this point? I mean, how quickly was it that you, yeah.
I was 17, 18.
So you guys
Life
are
Force,
signed.
I was 16.
So you're signed to like a legit major label, essentially. I mean, Roadrunner's huge. And yeah. You're still in high school.
Yep. I was still senior. Like, still senior in high school.
What was that like? Rolling up to school? I can't imagine.
It was the norm. I mean, we've always done things pretty differently with our band. I feel like Trivium has always done things differently. I've always done things differently. And it's just what we've known. So we decided that, didn't even decide. We just kept with it. Basically, when I joined from 13, I knew the year before that, when I was 12, that I wanted to be in the kind of band that travels around the world and is a metal band and plays music everywhere. And sure. Thankfully I've been doing that since then, minus the last year. However, I've been lucky that this last year I've been able to perform 5 days a week from my bedroom to people right. from around the world. So it's been going good.
That's so amazing. Real quick on those early days, were you guys touring? I mean, you must've been on those first two records.
Yeah, we did three shows in Europe on Ember to Inferno, like self-financed, bought the plane tickets, had two guys from Life Force Records.
Your parents came with you and everything?
My dad came with us because I was 17.
Yeah.
And he was the manager of the band. So we toured a little bit. I mean, that's three shows in Europe. We were always playing tons locally from 13 to 17, 13 to 18. Mm-hmm. And then once we got signed to Roadrunner, that's when we started touring. April 2004 is when we first started ever touring. That was a supporting God Forbid. And we've been on tour ever since then.
And at that age, were you were still 17 or you had graduated from high school?
I was 18, 19 then. I remember the first tour opportunity came up. I had graduated high school early because I had good grades and started college early. And that first tour opportunity came up. I brought it to my parents. I was like, what should I do? And they said, you can always go back to school. You should go see this thing through.
And that's amazing.
Lo and behold, that's what I've been doing since then.
Yeah, like two like things that are so supportive of your family. That's so cool.
I'm very lucky. And it's interesting too, being in two... I mean, my first job was Trivium and my second cool job ever is streaming on Twitch, and 90% of the time I'm playing Trivium songs on there anyway. So I'm in two professions that parents, I mean, not my parents, but the cliche parent idea would right. say that those two things don't make money. And lo and behold, I mean, streamers are making more than musicians do.
Unreal.
But not me, obviously, but the other guys, the big streamers are. And I'm in these two professions that I didn't need schooling for it. So it'll give us a different perspective when our kids are older and depending on what they want to do. Like, I know that there are career paths that don't require traditional schooling, but if they want to do that, they can too. So I think it's a good perspective.
I know, definitely. And I think people go to college and I think just in the assumption that like when you finish, you get a job because some jobs are like, well, you put in the work to get the college degree. Like you follow through it. It's like, you followed through on your dream. You followed through on working and working and working at the one thing that you wanted to do and you achieved it. So it's, I don't know. It's kind of like one of those, like you said, like our kids down the line, it's not as much go to school, get a job. It's just like grind out what you want to do and put the work in and you could possibly succeed.
Exactly. And I was very lucky that my dad saw, all right, my 12, 13 year old has seemed to already pick what he wants to do for a living. And I think that's cool. I'm going to nurture that.
Sure.
It's a truly amazing thing he did.
And on that record, that major label debut, I did read that you guys did like Ozfest and stuff. Was that on that same album?
That wasn't the same album. And to show what a racket Ozfest was back then, you had to buy on. I think it was like a $35,000 buy-on that each band had to pay to be on the tour, excluding all your fees of bus. We had to share a bus with another band at the other band. I don't know if they fully paid up on the bus. I think we actually ended up paying more than they did in the bus. We hire our own crew. It was very restrictive. Like we weren't allowed to go anywhere near the main stage bands because we were side stage scum. So we were only able to be catering at certain periods of time. Yeah. I mean, that was a great lineup and the Ozfest did cool lineups here and then, but to make bands buy onto a festival is such nonsense. And like Paulo brought that up. He's like, you remember we bought onto that? I was like, I completely forgot about that. We bought onto that tour and they still took a merch cut and we still had to pay for other stuff. But
they cut your merch too. That'd be the one thing that you're like, okay, at least we're going to pull home a bunch of money on t-shirts.
Oh no, no. I think it's like 25% cut, something like that. I think for every t-shirt. And we didn't sell that many shirts on that run either. So yeah, they were, They were rolling in some dough that dude, second stage bands were totally. Not. Yes.
Oh man. And then also you're getting on MTV at that point too, or at least Headbangers Ball and stuff.
A little bit. Yeah. I remember when like the Flies first debuted on Headbangers. Like the other thing, I know we're talking about a lot of good things that happen in Trivium. There is like a Trivium curse. Like our first video was supposed to air on Headbangers Ball. And I remember Jamie Josta was the host then. I think he said Trivium, but it was the wrong song title they gave him. I don't remember what it was, but he read the wrong song title and all the credits for a video were wrong.
So oh, it's in
some
man.
Other
band,
some other title. That's like typical Trivium stuff. Like it usually goes there. Just like Ember to Inferno comes out on the wrong day, or like when we're about to have a big festival set, it rains and our set gets pushed 2 hours. Like those are little, the Trivium curse I'm talking
the
about.
The Trivium curse.
Yeah, it's nothing horrible. It's just like little annoyances.
Sure, sure, sure. Well, the next record you guys put out was The Crusade. What would you say kind of, was that like a next level? Like you were doing Ozfest, but you're on the side stage. Like what was the next step up when that record came out?
For us, there was only one country we blew up in during Ascendancy. I mean, we're Ascendancy in the States. We're a van band. We're playing first of four for most tours. People, it wasn't clicking. It wasn't really clicking really anywhere in the world. I mean, Ozfest did well, but it didn't give us successful tours afterwards. However, okay. In the UK, we blew up to being this band that we're supposed to open the fifth stage at this festival called Download. Our tour completely sold out. We were on a rotating three band co-bill, but our reaction was so big, they had to bump us up to the headlining band. That entire tour sold out on our name. We got bumped up to the main stage, played the main stage at 11 a.m. to 40,000 people who all knew our stuff for some reason. The record went gold, had every magazine cover in the world. After Ascendancy's success, we started writing the next record. It was my idea. I said, let's rebel against everything we just did. Let's make a record that's the exact opposite, has no ingredients from the previous record, and show everyone else what else we're capable of. So we got rid of every single ingredient that Ascendancy was and made a record more like old school Trivium, like more influenced by thrash, more influenced by like 80s metal. And we went from being the band, the press darlings in the UK. This is the only time in history that Trivium was ever a press darling or a band's band. And what I mean by that is Trivium is the kind of band that we don't get magazine covers. We don't get awards, which is fine. I'm not trying to say this in like a sad way. We don't get those things. We're not the band that our side wings during a festival are packed of other bands. However, we are a band that our fan base is so loyal and so voracious and rabid that everything we ever do is fully supported by them. And we've been able to survive completely thanks to our fans. With the exception of the UK, Ascendancy blew the hell up in the UK. Ascendancy and Download, I mean, that Download set still hailed as one of the best Download sets of all time. Ascendancy still hailed as one of the best records in the UK. But the next record, we still got all the covers, but then they said Trivium is the worst band in the world. This is the worst record they've ever done. And all the UK did from basically then on till maybe two records ago was try to bury us. Like they never covered us again, never talked about us. Anytime they did, it was just a jab about how we were this once great band who could no longer do things well. So it was really rough. And when Ascendancy came out, we were 18 coming out saying, we're going to be the next Metallica. Right. All the other bands that have been around longer than us, all the bands that were 10, 20 years older than us were like, who the fuck are these kids? Sure. Fuck these kids.
Well,
and
you were like
Kerrang
magazine, like band, or wasn't it like record of the year and all this stuff?
We were bullied by some of our favorite bands on tour with them. I remember reading some of my favorite guys talking shit about me personally in magazine interviews, having them never met me growing up with their posters in my bedroom. Like it was a really tough time. And when we did The Crusade as well, the UK, it's actually a gold record now, ironically.
Wow.
For the UK to bag so badly on. However, what did happen with that record is we started opening the doors in Europe. Iron Maiden loved that record. They brought us on a 7-week European tour.
That's so sick.
And we played an arena tour with Maiden for 7 weeks. And that record did very well in other places in the world. So we started seeing that every record we do does well in other places. Shogun has done the best in Australia. Ascendancy has done best in the UK and now the US. The US's best record is probably Silence in the Snow or Sin in the Sentence. And then
Sin in the Sentence had the Grammy nomination.
Yeah. So every record has had a different path. But I didn't say any of that to sound salty. Like these are things that happened way back 18, 19 years old, but they were good for us because it showed us that the only thing that we do have in our life is the people in this band, our very close circle. Like our manager has been managing me since I was 16 years old. And our fans. So thankfully, everything that we do is supported by our fans. My channel, my Twitch channel that's been doing very, very well for me is because of Trivium fans. It's not because kids who love to watch Ninja play Fortnite are subbing to my channel. It's Trivium fans who've been with us for a month, a year, 20 years, it's and everything in between. It's them supporting us. So we definitely have, you know, some of the greatest people in the world supporting us, which I'm very, very thankful to have.
That's amazing. Real quick on the Crusade, you got a chance to tour with Metallica on that tour, on that record.
Yeah,
you?
We did.
Was
yeah,
that
we
got kind to, of a, like, you know, mind-blowing moment for you being such a fan of the band?
I've done well meeting like a lot of my heroes, but Hetfield is the one I really messed up with. I actually said, you're my biggest fan when I first met him. Like I totally screwed everything up. Cause I mean, he's the one that when I saw what he does, that showed me what I want to do for a living. Sure. But they were super great people. The guys in Metallica are some of the nicest people we ever met. Guys in Iron Maiden are some of the nicest guys we've ever met. And it's been amazing. It's been very, we're very lucky to have been able to play with all the amazing bands that we have.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that you say that meeting head, or you were just kind of like, oh, I love you. For me, it was Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day. It was like my idol as a kid. And I got to meet him once and I couldn't even open my mouth. I was just like, my buddy was like, oh, Billy Joe, will you take a picture of my friend? And I'm like trying to hand him my phone. And I'm just like, if I were going to meet him again, it would be like, I would need to like really compose myself.
Yep. And I've like half of my favorite bands in my life that I've told them like, hey, I grew up listening to you. I mean, some of the bands that I loved, you know, Children of Bodom and Flames. I remember buying their VHS bootleg VHS off eBay because they wouldn't tour in Central Florida. So that was the way I'd watch them. I'd like collect their cassettes. I had their posters, magazine covers, all this stuff. And some bands that I've told over the years, like what a big fan I was, sometimes they're a little strange. They get kind of quiet and awkward, and sometimes they're appreciative. So I make sure whenever someone ever tells me, I would just let them know, thank you so much. I make sure they don't feel weird by my weird reaction.
But yeah, don't meet your heroes type thing.
Thankfully, I haven't had anything like that with anyone. Like, I think that anyone you ever think they might be kind of strange, they maybe are kind of strange, but everyone that I've had the pleasure of meeting that's a hero or a favorite has always been really fantastic.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Oh, I know we're going to skip ahead a little bit here, but I'm just curious, like once we get to the Sin and the Sentence, you put that record out. I mean, it's your seventh album, or you had 7 hours, eighth album. You had seven prior to that record. And
that's a lot.
I mean, that you get nominated for a Grammy at this point. Was it like, oh my God, finally? Or is it like, that's rad, we're nominated for a Grammy?
We're very happy, very appreciative, very thankful. But just as every good thing happens, I remember when we were presented the Gold Award for Ascendancy on stage, we had other things going on. I remember we got it presented, went upstairs, and we're in an argument about something unrelated. But whenever we do get accolades, rewards, or praise, we always like take a moment to appreciate it and take a moment to be thankful and happy for it. But then just remember, we got to keep working. This doesn't mean anything. This doesn't mean we've arrived. This doesn't mean we're done. This doesn't mean we've hit the pinnacle. And that's something that the four of us in this lineup, the way we are now, obviously very much so carry. I mean, my stream that I talked about, it's Monday through Friday. And like I said, 75 to 90% of that is just me practicing Trivium songs. So
really?
We never stop. Like I treat my practice regimen, I think, more like an athlete than a musician. Mm-hmm. So I've met several musicians like this. We've had some musicians like this in our bands that once they feel like they're signed, they're good. I've made it.
Right.
Don't have to practice.
Right.
I'm good. You've had the skills to get this far. That's not the way I see it. The way I see it is it needs to be a year round thing. I make it so I'm conditioned. At any given moment, if I had to go on tour tomorrow or make a record tomorrow, I am in shape vocally. I'm in shape musically. There's never off time. Whereas before, I used to off tour. If there was no tour, I wouldn't be singing. I mean, I'd play guitar a little bit, but I would start rehearsing the 2 weeks before a tour, get myself back in vocal shape, get in shape for studios. But now it's nonstop. It's always, always practiced, always ready to go. And thankfully, all four of us individually carry that. And then all of us as a unit truly carry that. So when we had that nomination, it's the same thing. This is awesome. This is very cool. This doesn't happen to a lot of people. Let's keep working though.
I love that. And I've heard that from other artists before, like the, you know, we got signed to our label. So we did it. It's more like, I've got a seat at the table now. Now, what are you going to do with it? Right.
Yep,
it's
like, exactly.
They're not like handing you money and fame and stadium full of people. It's like,
exactly.
We're giving you a platform to try to succeed.
That's the big thing. It's like, nothing is a guarantee. Nothing. Like, even if you get an award or you get signed or something happens, you do a sold out tour, you have a record that takes off, a single that takes off. If you don't keep it up, if you don't keep up the things that put you there in the first place, then they're not going to stay. If they stay, you're very lucky. But if you keep that work going, you keep putting that effort in, then good things can keep going.
Sure. And I have a question to you about where you guys, I mean, because you have so many albums, and I'm sure, did you go in the regimen of like album tour? And you get to 2020, you have a record out, What the Dead Men Say. And where were you before that album came out? Was that like the record was recorded in 2019 and then this pandemic hits? And then it's like, what do we do? Like, talk to me about where you guys were once this whole coronavirus started.
We had finished What the Dead Men Say and we had tours set up. I started paying attention and saying, all right, this looks kind of weird. I think something's going to happen. I was like, Matt, the world's not going to shut down. I'm like, I'm telling you, I think the world's going to shut down. They're like, it's not going to shut down. Yeah. I was obviously right. So our label management said, we can postpone this thing because we will lose physical sales. Like there's no getting around it. You're going to lose physical sales. We said, we don't care about sales. We don't care about money. We want to get this record out and give people an escape for however long this record is. Give them 1 hour of entertainment. That. And so we released it. We said, we don't care. Don't care about charting. Don't care about selling CDs. We don't care. We just want people to have an escape right now. And that's the driving thing with Trivium. And we decided to do a paid for show. It was at the time, the most successful paid for ticketed metal stream, A Light or Distant Mirror, that we did, because the whole 3.5 years leading up to that, we've streamed every single live Trivium show for free from my channel. I've got this backpack that we run into the soundboard, and we have,
really?
If you go into my Twitch channel, there's an archive from 2017 to 2019 of free shows. We streamed every single one from our board. So we said, all right, we've done all the free ones. Let's do a pay for one.
That is so cool. Yeah, I did not realize that. Wow. So you've really been rocking the Twitch thing for a while.
A lot of people start talking about live streaming now, but yeah, I've been live streaming for now 4 years on Twitch and live streaming every Trivium show for the last 3.5 years.
That's
for free.
So sick. That is
so nonstop. The next step after Light or Distant Mirror did well, we then had, you know, we took a big risk. We took everything we had saved, saying, all right, touring might go away for a year. Here's all we have in the bank to pay ourselves. Let's invest in this show. So we bought staging, hired Muse's staging director, flew our crew in, kept COVID precautions, did that show. Then thankfully the show did well. Uh-huh. Took the cash from that and bought an airplane hangar. So now Trivium is converting an airplane hangar to a stream. It's being a stream HQ, rehearsal studio, practice place. It's basically our headquarters. So we own that now, and it's being built up. So that's the new phase of what we're into right now.
That is so cool. And is that like through your streaming, is that how you kind of got a hold of Jared Dines and did that record together? Or was that all done over quarantine?
Dines, I had been a fan of his YouTube already for a long time. Someone mentioned having me on one of his Shred Wars. I tweeted back. We did that. He actually filled in for me. I had to leave a tour when my twins were born, and he was already out doing videos and hanging out, but he filled in for all of my parts for the entire set. He did all my guitar parts. Howard Jones did all my vocals with Johannes from Avatar and Paulo and Corey, and then Brandon from Atreyu. So we had like five people fill in for me when I was gone, and we didn't have to cancel a single show. Yeah. So it's,
were you able to see any of the shows? Were you streaming with the backpack?
I had every single show streamed. So I was still watching shows from the hospital, which was crazy. Like I said, we never do things the way other people do them. We just do them very strange.
Was it cool to see your song sung in like a different, you know, reimagined, so to speak?
It was crazy. I mean, Howard Jones is one of my favorite singer screamers of all time. And to hear him do my stuff, I'm like, wow, he sounds way better than me doing my stuff. So that was cool. And Johannes from Avatar is amazing. And Brandon Salad from Atreyu is one of my favorite singers of all time too. So hearing him do my stuff was incredible. So it was a great thing. And that's what I love about our band. Our band it's not led by the front man. Our band is led by the four people in the band. We are all as important as everyone else in this band. And we do everything in that sense. I mean, when this pandemic was still going on for kind of a long time, we said, Alex, we want you here. We're going to cover all your moving costs. Move here. So he moved to Florida. Now we all live 10 minutes from each other. And we're like, all right, now let's buy this airplane hangar. So we're a true unit. One of my favorite things I ever heard was from Mark Morton from Lamb of God at a festival. I think it was Grass Pop. He laughed. He's like, how are you guys always around each other? He's like, everywhere I look, it's all four of you hanging out. He's like, don't you guys, he didn't say this part, but it was something like a friendlier way of, don't you guys get tired of seeing each other? But
sure,
that's the way it should be. I'm very, very lucky that when we're on tour, every day off, 2 to 4 of us get breakfast together. And then every dinner, all four of us with our crew. It's like we hang out 7 days a week on tour. We want to see each other. We've been hanging out in my backyard quite a bit, working on the hangar stuff, rehearsals, all this stuff. So I'm very, very lucky to have such a strong unit and to have such an amazing fan base.
That is so awesome. That is so awesome. Well, with the, you know, Twitch channel and the hangar and everything else going on, are you guys working on anything like new music wise, or are you able to even write right now? It sounds like you're so busy.
All four of us stream, and the main focus right now, is completely on the hangar. It's on the hangar. Okay. I'm about to have my 10-year side project finally come out. It's called Ibaraki. It's a Japanese black metal record that I did with Ishan from Emperor.
Wow.
It's actually been 10 years of recording and 10 years of work. So that should be out middle of this year. I've got a couple of cool projects coming. I've got a song with Mike Shinoda coming out soon. A song with Richard Marx coming out soon. Like the Richard Marx. Right here. Wow. Waiting. Yes.
Oh, really? Yeah. How did that connection happen?
I saw his son was wearing a Trivium shirt, so I hit him up on social media. Super amazing guy.
Stayed
in touch. One day I commented on his Instagram, hey, let's do a song together. And then he texted me, let's do it. So I did a metal version of Right Here Waiting. he did the vocals on it already. It's sick. Will Putney from Fit for an Autopsy is mixing the song. I just did a K-pop cover.
Really? Ace. That's cool too.
I had to learn to rap and sing and scream in Korean, which is pretty crazy. So just nonstop, just doing stuff like this all the time.
You are a workhorse, man.
Thanks, man. I try.
And thank you so much for taking time out of your like extremely busy schedule.
No worries.
To chat with me today.
My pleasure, man.
I do have one more question for you, Matt. I want to know if you have any advice to aspiring artists. I know you've been dropping gems like throughout this whole thing, but
just keep working hard, put everything that you like. If you truly believe you're meant to do something in life, put all the energy you can into that thing. If that doesn't work, at least you know you can divert that much energy into something good and work on it into something else. And it may take you a couple of tries to figure out what it is. I know I'm a different circumstance because Trivium was my first thing, but people don't see the bad moments. They don't remember. They only see where we're at now. They only see where I'm at now with my stream, only see where I'm at now with Trivium, only see where I'm at now with Jiu-Jitsu. But all these things had ups and downs and really rough, terrible times. And it's about sticking with them. And, you know, there's definitely a moment, you know, if things are going too bad, like I said, it's time to redirect. But know that if you can prove to yourself that you can work that hard on anything, then that's a very good thing.